very busy. Many important matters require a king's attention.
I'm king now. King now.
I am king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again.
I am
turn.
Your fingers or your
king doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plans.
He's one,
but
your fingers or your tongue.
I am the king. I'm telling mother.
Welcome to the Joffria Podcast. My name's Bubba, and with me, as always, is
Catfish.
Catfish, we just watched season 8. Episode 2 of Game of Thrones, an episode entirely in one location. We never went anywhere else on the map. There's nowhere else to go on the map. What is your ranking for Season 8, Episode 2, Game of Thrones? And if you have a title, we'll take that too. What is your ranking out of 10 for this episode?
My title for this episode is Another Episode Has No Name.
Oh, okay.
And I am going to give this 9. I went back and forth. I thought triple P's.
Triple P's?
Yeah, pound packing Podricks. He's been enjoying, I think Hot Pie must be cooking for him. But I settled on 9 triple B's.
Triple B's?
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. That is for all the talking that went on in this episode. And for a while I was disappointed, and then I realized.
Realized?
Yeah. And you know, this is just my trust in the show.
Okay.
This was a pause for the cause. And what was that cause? Getting to know everybody again before some of them die next week. Some of the people that we have known and loved are going to die next week.
Oh,
and
yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I enjoyed it. I thought this was the last, presumably, for me anyway, I hope this is the case. This was the last sort of catch up with everybody. We sort of tied up a bunch of things already.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention that Arya tied up Gendry.
Whoa, hello.
And so a lot of things got resolved this week. Unfortunately, Tormund didn't get to do the same with Brienne.
He tried.
We got an amazing story about giant's milk. So even though there wasn't a lot going on, when I realized like where I think this episode is going to be in the run,
uh-huh,
I really feel like it's going to be action, action, action from here on out. And so that this was necessary. And again, really the only real thing that happened in the episode, except for, you know, Gendry getting notch number 4 on his belt, was yet another thing with Jon's parentage that we get right at the end.
Love it. Love it. Love it.
So I gave it 9. For a while I was going to give it, I really was going to give it a low ranking until I realized like what I think is about to happen. So trusting that what this episode is doing and what the rest of the episodes are going to do, I give it a 9. Now, what about you, Bubba? What did you give it and why?
Well, Catfish, like you, I kind of wavered back and forth as to what my ranking was going to be. But in the end, I settled on 10. Well, this is difficult. I had a bunch like you did. At 10, what I like to call double O's out of 10.
Double O's?
Obligatory obituaries. Yes, we're getting to know these people before they die. But I also thought, it could be 10, what I like to call double J's out of 10.
Oh, double J's?
Jailbait juice. That's what Arya was flaunting at Gendry, some evil jailbait juice. But I settled on 10 double B's out of 10.
Oh, double B's?
Well, here in the Game of Thrones community, when you hear somebody say double B, they're referring to Bran bait.
Oh,
they're using yes. Bran to bait the Night King. I love that twist. I love everything about it. And it is slow. It is an all-in-one location. This might be the least action-packed. I mean, I shouldn't use that phrase, action-packed, talking about this episode. But because I think for today through next Sunday, this will be the only time anybody watches this episode and doesn't immediately go into the next episode, I didn't mind it. I liked some of the reunions we had in this episode. I liked some of the mm-hmm. discussions we had in this episode. And
yeah.
Because I know next week we're going to the fireworks factory, I really, really enjoyed this moment we got with everybody. When they had that scene where everybody was around the table kind of agreeing, it was so unique to this show, which it never had everybody together all agreeing, okay, this is what we're going to do. I loved it, loved it, loved it. I want the battle episode to blow me away next week, but for this week, 10 out of 10, I don't have a single complaint.
Wow, that is great. 10 double Fs.
Double Fs?
Yeah, firework factories.
That's next week's. Yeah, spoiler alert.
Sorry. All right. Next week's Love It. Okay, well.
Hold on, yeah. Catfish. I've got to interrupt and say, because it's season 8, because so many people started Game of Thrones who had never been on watching a part of the fandom until the run-up to this show, I want to say up front, we are the Joffria Podcast, named after the greatest fictional, real-life person in the world, His Grace King Joffrey Baratheon. First of his name, first in your hearts. And we want everybody to be on this journey with us. We've been doing this podcast for years and years and years. Last week's podcast was downloaded in over 92 countries, meaning 93. We're going to be attending Con of Thrones this year, aren't we, Catfish?
Oh, yeah, we are going to Con of Thrones. I completely forgot about that.
Yes, it's easy to forget when the Night King is coming. And we do these reaction shows right after the episode airs. So if you download this later this week, the week of in April of 2019, or you download this years from now, know that we don't, because it's an instant reaction, sometimes people find things out later. And you may listen to this podcast and say, well, boy, why were they talking about that? We're talking about it because we didn't know any better. Reach out to us on our Twitter and Instagram pages. That's at @PHQ, the word double, the letter P, and then the letters HQ for headquarters. We're also on Facebook.com/PHQ and YouTube. Well, the URL is messed up. Just go to YouTube, search for the Joffria Podcast, search for PHQ. We love you guys. The way you
This is a jump in the middle of the pub, but I just wanted to kind of, even though we're reacting quickly, of course, we are a couple of double S's.
Double S's? Yes,
yeah, Sir Sharps.
Okay.
Because last week I conjectured that we would find out that the crossbow given to Bronn was the same one that killed Tywin Lannister. And I read somewhere that that was the case.
Yeah, we know it. We know it. We're double E's.
Double E's.
Educated experts.
Yeah.
And experts is in quotes. Listeners, we have been reaching out to the people we like to call double L's.
Double L's.
Loyal listeners, people who've been on this podcast trained for a bit. And we've been saying, if you tweet out with the hashtag Joffria Podcast, or you tweet at us, you Instagram at us, you leave a comment on the YouTube page or Facebook page, you're going to be part of a group we like to call the Season 8 Survivors. Everybody's wondering which of our characters are going to survive Season 8. Well, our double L's, our loyal listeners, we have a new group that reached out to us this week, and we want to talk about them because they're going to survive. I'm going to go down the list real quick. We got Jacqueline MewQ at MewQ24 on Twitter. We've got Skylar at EkAdair on Twitter. We've got, spoiler alert, at Hamlet is Dead on Twitter, at EndlessMike03 on Twitter, at HeyRef, our good buddy Sean Gregan, the wonderful, the only Patman Spedagle, at Patman23, at Jesse_Damplow. We've got a wonderful, true double E, educated expert on the Game of Thrones, at Shakes of Thrones. We've got a great horse follow on Twitter, at Amy Home Alone, at Nathan Dockin, at BTMac11, at Clobberchop, at Seth Taco, Priscilla Valdaire, Peter Connolly down in Australia, we love him, Braden McElhenney, Susan Monk, Thomas Clapper, Ron Rayner Jr., Conrad's, I can't pronounce your last name, Conrad.
Cherwinski.
Perfect. Tiffany Coates Goodman, Nikki Powell, Matt Foster, Nick Fortuna, Simon, and Jesse Jordan, at Mr. Jesse Jordan on Twitter. So many people
and
are...
And Brandon McCauley, who was the word you tried to say earlier, and I don't even know what you said.
So can you believe all these people are going to survive Season 8? It's a miracle.
It is a miracle, because I'm not sure who's going to survive the next episode. But it was, you know, in addition to nice being able to catch up with everybody, it was sort of a nice tease. I mean, if you wanted to watch this episode again as a drinking game, you could go through and go, okay, and predict who is going to live and who is going to die.
I think people who got their special moment in this episode, you'd be like, ooh, don't take a special moment. Don't take a special moment. That means you're dead. Don't take a curtain call, people. A double C. Oh, boy. Yeah, some people like Pod, who got that singing moment, his Westeros idol moment there singing. I was like, oh, boy, watch out there, buddy.
Now, Bubba, a lot of people ask me, they say, you know, the Joffria Podcast, since Joffrey is the greatest character living or fictional, it feels like there should be a kind of a worldwide appeal to the Joffria Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So they say to me, How many countries is the Joffrey podcast heard in?
93, baby.
93. I love it. That's amazing. We need 7 more before Joffrey will come back.
No, they keep teasing us so much. The way you can help us grow into other countries is to leave a review on the way you download or listen to this podcast and let people know. On the United States iTunes Store this week, we got 2 reviews. Gatfish, you want to go through those real quick before we dive into the episode?
Absolutely. The first one is by Cheapaz.
We love
you. And the title is Double E of All GOT Podcasts, 5 stars.
Double E?
Yeah, epically entertaining.
Oh, thank
Bubba
you.
Bubba and Catfish shown this formerly unstraightened supporter of the Surly Starks the error of my ways. I'm now proudly and rabidly a fan of the one true King Joffrey. Their POV episodes of the various characters, but especially of King Joffrey, brings depth and clarity.
Oh, yeah.
The show's producers and even R. Martin was unable to achieve, which is why there's so many people have been deceived into being fans of the Usurpers. This is a... And for some reason, it's in quotes, must listen podcast.
We know why. Thank you so much, Cheap Ass.
Yeah. And the other one we have is by Scott.
Hey,
from
Scott.
Wisconsin.
We love Wisconsin.
And he gives the podcast 5 stars.
Woohoo.
And accompanies that with some very exciting, praiseworthy words. Worth a listen.
That was the title. He also said a real fun podcast, and the guys are super entertaining. Thank you so much,
Scott.
That
is right. That is absolutely right.
Well, there was a lot of blathering in this show, Catfish. Let's get to it. Let's jump in, unless you got any more announcements. We've been going through them.
I mean, my only other announcement is that one of our real strong loyal listeners, Michael Killey, who is going to be at the head of the season 8 Survivors, still needs to feel some love from you, Bubba. He needs to feel love specifically from you.
Okay, Mike. Mike, there's one way to do it. For somebody else to write us an iTunes review.
To mention him.
Right.
My good friend Mike Killey made me listen to this podcast. Amazing.
Okay.
So, let's get into it.
So I read something that said the credits were going to change every week. I tried to watch the credits. They seem to have this kind of gold kind of points on a map leading from the hole in the wall past Last Hearth down to Winterfell. I kind of lost them after that. Winterfell seems to this week, and maybe I just didn't notice it last week, seems to have like fire trenches dug around it, which I think is pretty cool. Other than that, I, on a first watch, did not notice anything different about these awesome brand new for season 8 credits. Did you have any thoughts there, Catfish?
I had 0 thoughts, and I'm ready to move on.
Well, it's time for the trial. These Lannister boys, they like being on trial. We had the trial of evil Uncle Tyrion. This episode begins with the King Killer. Excuse me, King Slayer, Jaime Lannister. Any thoughts on how this went? I talked last week about how I thought certain things went fast. This went a bit faster than I would have liked. I would have liked more people ripping him a new one, but I did enjoy it overall. That's my overall thought on this beginning trial of Jaime. What about you?
I did too. What I liked about it was that, the things that have made us like Jaime more, he was able to have people testify to that in this trial, right? So he's got Brienne and Sansa on his side. So Daenerys doesn't have to listen to Tyrion. She's got 2 people who have no reason to lie to her, saying that he's kind of a trustworthy guy. And let's face it, I mean, they're right. She's right. They need every single person who's going to wield the sword. I mean, you know, they got little girls with grayscale offering to fight on the walls. They need everybody.
They do need everybody, but this is still, let's get to it. I like to think I can move past things, but if you kill my dad, you know, that's a hard sell. The one thing I missed in this trial was Arya pointing out that Jaime killed Jory, which was back in season 1, episode 5, where he stabbed Jory through the eye, or when Sansa pointed out, hey, you know, you did things against my family, and he said, we were at war. And I'm kind of like, you know, when you stab Ned through the leg, I'm not sure you were actually at war then. he needed to be right. Bran cross-examined this guy, Bran.
The thing that I thought was more interesting here, and they didn't kind of follow up on it, was that, again, I was the person who wasn't happy with the fight between Sansa and Daenerys last week.
Mm-hmm.
because I thought they would resolve it. And then they did, and then they didn't. They undid it right away, which right. I like better when we get to that. But what I thought would come up here was it's sort of like Sansa makes a decision, and Daenerys gives her the side eye, but that wasn't really followed up on. In other words, like, I would have said, you know, like we kept saying last year about Sansa, like, please don't say shit in front of other people. You know, she kept on doing that to knocking down Jon in front of everybody else. This one, she shows up Daenerys in front of everybody else. I'm surprised Daenerys didn't become a thing. They just moved on from that.
They moved on from a lot of things. I mean, they have a little moment, you know, but Jaime comes out and says, Cersei ain't coming. She's got Euron his ships. She's got 20,000 soldiers from Essos, the Golden Company. And then his only defense is when Tyrion says she fooled me. He's like, she fooled me too. Hello.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you want to move on to that Tyrion and Daenerys scene after this.
Well, no. Maybe in a sec. First, there's still wonderful things in this scene, especially Bran, whose contribution, the things...
So good. Sorry, I hadn't written that down. I put Bran, and then I put capital Y-E-S. Yes, Bran. Still able to make some zings.
I know. You know what? Sometimes, you know, Bran last week, he was doing the, you know, blink challenge at people where he would stare at them and they'd look away or blink. This week, he saw all the people dropping the mics last week, and he's like, I want to drop some of these.
You know what's funny? You know what's funny, though, is, of course, we remember those things. But have you ever been in a situation, Bubba, where somebody says to you, like, God, I always remember this thing that you said a couple years ago, Bubba, right, that was so funny, and you don't have any memory of it at all?
Never.
Right?
So Bran goes...
So I want Bran to say the things you do for love, and Jaime to go, huh?
Hey, I'm on trial for my life here, kid. Quiet.
Yeah. And whatever you're talking about, can you save it for later? Like, he has no memory of saying that.
Now, another thing that I have to be honest, I think Bran needs to jump in here for a minute. Brienne comes forward and she goes, I know Sir Jaime, he is a man of honor. I was his captor once. She was his captor? Meaning she, well, I guess she was leading him back to King's Landing, but I also kind of thought he was really... Catelyn Stark's was his captor. I don't know. I'm accepting it.
Yeah, no, it's all fine. But I mean, this is what we talked about last week. I mean, it's funny that Bran can kind of jump in and say certain stuff. But honest to God, no one needs to talk in the entire season 8 except for Bran.
Right. Exactly.
Just turn Bran. True. False.
Right.
Any other information that might be helpful? Okay. Good.
Well, that would be a great episode. In fact, that's what they cut away from when Tyrion was like, oh, you've had an interesting journey. They cut away and he pretty much put on the seven previous seasons Blu-rays. He put them in and let Tyrion watch them.
I wonder if he has any shame about the Hodor thing.
That part Bran's going to leave out. That's going to be redacted. He's going to go, Attorney General Barr, please remove that part.
Yeah. Sorry, there's a whole black section here. I just don't remember what's going on.
Now, a couple of other things before we leave the trial. Sansa, after Brienne's impassioned speech, Sansa says, you know, I trust you with my life. And it's a bit of a change because so far we've had season 6 of Sansa and Brienne and season 7. And in both seasons, Sansa kind of dismissed Brienne and sent her away and was like, yeah, I'm fine, later. And suddenly today she's like, if Brienne says okay, I'm okay. So I thought that was a bit odd. But once again, I gave this episode a 10 out of 10. I didn't mind at all. And then the final thing, which was a big kind of through line of the episode, after the trial's over, Daenerys wants to talk to somebody, specifically her main squeeze, Jon Snow, and he's skipping away. He's trying to ghost after his dire wolf, Daenerys.
Oh, I like what you did there.
And so, what do you think about that? What did you think about Jon Snow ghosting Daenerys?
He has got to know. And again, you know, these Starks sometimes, they are just dumb. They think, oh, everyone should have honor and everything should react to the same way to things. But presumably he's wised up a little bit. I mean, he's still alive. And he has got to know that she is not going to be happy about this.
No.
Now, Irregardless of whether that means that he's the rightful heir, because we're going to have to talk about that scene when we get to the end, because I felt like he seemed a little confused or nonplussed by that, when like he didn't realize the ramifications. But I don't want to jump to there. That's the only thing of consequence that happens in this whole episode, so let's not skip to it now.
But she looks, Daenerys looks to her man. His eyes are on the floor. He can't even meet her eyes. That's how much this is messed him up. And that leads into the scene where Uncle Tyrion, everybody, you listen to anybody's Game of Thrones podcast, and they're like, Tyrion felt so smart in those early seasons, and all he's done is make mistakes. And Daenerys calls him on it, and it's good. Finally, somebody calls him on it. You know what I mean? It's like, finally, somebody is saying to him, you just screw up. And just like she did last year, Daenerys is like, should I trust you? Should I trust you? You know,
right.
I took
Either you're stupid, in which case you're not going to help me win this war.
Right.
Or you're a traitor. And, you know, we talked a little bit about this last season. We didn't know, you know, how the end went with the conversation. We were, as an audience, we were deliberately left out of the end of the conversation between Cersei and Tyrion, where presumably she agreed to send troops. And I guess this is the first we're hearing of at least what Tyrion's description of the end of that is going to be, is that she tells him she's changed because she's pregnant. So I have always taken Tyrion at face here, but I also have a hard time deciding. Like, he's always seemed smart to me, and I carry a lot of this over from the books. There's a lot of, in the books, like, he is super smart. I mean, he's smart here in the TV show, too, but you really identify with him, you know, as a commoner reading, you identify with him because he's got the smarts and he's got everything else. It's just because of his birth and what happened during his birth that he's been shunted off to the side. But, I mean, I have a hard time believing that he's so stupid that he's not being a traitor. Like, I think this is a real honest discussion we could have.
Okay, well, let's have. Do you want to have? You mean the characters on the show could have it, or we could have it? Let's discuss.
No, we can have it.
Double T.
Double T.
Traitor Tyrion. Yes or no? Is he doing this on purpose to screw over the mother of dragons? What do you think?
I just can't see it, but I also can't see him being stupid. I get, like, either answer seems horrible to me.
Well, okay, which answer is the most horrible?
I mean, the most disappointing answer would be that he's this stupid, and so I think the best answer for the show is that he's a traitor. But that doesn't make any sense to me. I'm completely bereft here.
Well, we're going to have to see. If it's okay, let's go ahead and follow this thread of Daenerys questioning her main advisor Tyrion and jump ahead in the episode to about, jump ahead in the episode to 19 and a half minutes in, when Daenerys appears to be in her own chamber. She's looking into the fire and almost has tears in her eyes when who comes in behind her? Sir Friendzone, this isn't office politics anymore. This isn't him angling to be hand of the queen. It's him coming in and saying, the guy who screws up so much, give him another chance.
Yeah, it's completely weird.
I liked it, though. You know, Sir Jorah, he seems honorable nowadays.
I guess that's what happened. He does seem honorable. I just don't. I'm confused about where this whole plot line is leading, unless it's that Tyrion is actually being a traitor somehow.
Do you want that? Do you want the double T, traitorous Tyrion?
I do. Let's have it. I'm all in. Let's do this.
Okay, she's got to be betrayed, House of the Undying Book Readers. No, she's got some betrayals to come, and so we'll see. Sir Jorah comes in, and this is something I really, double L's, loyal listeners, newbie fans to the Joffrey podcast, I want your opinion on. So Sir Jorah comes in and he's like, you know, I spend a trip from Volantis through the ruins of Valyria to Slaver's Bay with him. I wanted to kill him and throw him out of the boat a million times. P.S. Keep him in his job. You know, not the greatest endorsement. But then, listeners, are you okay that it seems to be Sir Jorah who convinces Daenerys to, hey, go to Sansa and give her a shot? I thought that was interesting. interesting. I wonder if some people who are very sensitive about this, and I'm not saying they shouldn't be sensitive about this, if it's, you know, oh, it took a man to bring these two powerful women together, where I read it as Sajora is somebody she really trusts. And sometimes, you know, you do need your friends to point you in the right direction. But what did, what did you think?
I like that Jorah is, you know, what's happening right now is that he's not Hand of the Queen, but because he's not Hand of the Queen, he hasn't disappointed her the way Tyrion has. No, seriously, honestly, like he, and so the fact is, maybe he feels like this needs to be told to her, but she's not going to hear it from Tyrion right now. So it's a good move for her to, like, you know, the reason why she was stuck over on the other side of the ocean was because she was supposedly learning how to be a leader. Now, again, we didn't see a lot of proof that she learned much, and she's still showing that she's got a real heavy touch when it comes to certain things. Specifically, this scene with Sansa.
Yeah. Well, let's get to it. I do want to say that one thing I had never really considered, Daenerys called this argument that Ser Jorah is making, Ser Frenzone is making, she called it, you're defending the man who took your position. And I guess I, for whatever reason, I never really took it as Ser Jorah was Hand to the Queen, even though I guess he was. He was Hand to the Khaleesi, but I never really took it that way. But the way that she specifically framed it that way, I thought that was very, very interesting. And so
yeah. His real response should have been, Jon Snow is the one who took my position.
Missionary. Now moving forward. All right, now moving.
The Mormonts, they like it the old-fashioned way.
Moving forward, let's get to this showdown of Daenerys and Sansa. And I do have to point out, if everybody go back and download our 8 top characters heading into season 8. We talked about who? Jon Royce. And Jon Royce, man, he's getting screen time. He's had more lines and scenes than a lot of characters, actually. He's in here talking to Sansa, getting advice from Sansa. He's from the Vale. That is a different kingdom than the North. And yet he's still talking to Sansa. I love it, love it, love it. Way to go, Jon Royce. Way to get into those scenes and get these SAG credits, buddy. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, she, first of all, she doesn't have a lot of people. She has empty positions to fill. Second of all, I think she appreciates how he dissed Littlefinger there at the end when Littlefinger was looking for him to get out of there.
Love it.
The other thing I'll say is, and I, you know what? Honestly, I don't make a lot of comments about the costume on this show, but Sansa's bondage gear tonight was top flight.
Oh, you liked it.
I mean, wowza. She is looking very sharp and ready to punish someone.
She's down in the dungeon, sex dungeon, with that outfit. Let's be terrible, listeners. Feel free to write us and hate us. But let's be terrible men. You have two absolutely stunning, gorgeous actresses here. You've got Daenerys in her let's remake the 80s shoulder pads outfit. And we have Sansa in her black leather with her infamous chain outfit. Which one's the best, Catfish? Which one wins Miss Westeros? Leader of Westeros, however you want to say. What do you think of these outfits? What do you think of these two lovely actresses?
It's Triple S for the win.
Triple S?
Yeah, sexy Surly Stark.
Oh, Sansa, so good.
Yeah. Now, see, what was funny was I wrote in my notes here, see, they made up and all that stuff was ridiculous that happened last week. But I actually, right away, I actually like this a lot better for some reason this week. Because when it comes down to it, you know, for the first thing is Daenerys very smartly disarms Sansa by saying, like, you think I'm leading your brother around? Like, I'm here fighting with my dragons. Like, I'm here fighting your war. So I thought that was a really smart thing to say to her and correctly disarm Sansa.
Yeah,
but when the rubber hits the road, Sansa's concerned about and who again, like, I don't know. You know, the stupid Starks are always worried about honor and everything has to be right. And my more concern is you know, let's jump off that bridge when we get to it, like who's going to rule the Iron Throne, etc. You know, because there's going to be a lot of people dead between now and then. So let's not worry about that now.
Just stop talking about Podrick. We'll get to him. But but I want to get to this. Number one, you're absolutely right, Catfish. That twist where Daenerys says, oh, you think I'm leading him around, you know, through romance? He's leading me around. I loved it as well as you did. But people in this episode, not just Sansa, keep talking about things that are going to happen after quote unquote, after the Night King. Bran's the only one who's like, you sure there's an after the Night King? Good work, Three-Eyed Raven Bran. We love you. But Sansa's, what about the North? What about the North? It really reminded me of Yara Greyjoy way back in the end of season 6, episode 10, the great episode, The Winds of Winter. Yara's like, you know, yeah, I'll join you. I could marry you, Daenerys, if you want to, but the Iron Islands need to be an independent kingdom. And Daenerys kind of said cool with that. And I wonder if by breaking the wheel, it's like, I'm queen of the Seven Kingdoms, except none of the Seven Kingdoms have to follow me. She's kind of given it all up. And I wonder if that will happen. So I liked that Sansa was like, what about the North? What about the North? I like that. Good Sansa Stark, in my opinion.
I liked it a little bit better here. It kind of made a little bit more sense. And you see where they could be compatriots. They're at odds. They're at odds, like you and one of our loyal listeners, Dooley's left legs is at odds. Because you refuse to put him on the survivor list, and he's afraid. It's going to be him and Jaime Lannister, hand in hand, or hand in metal, in gold glove.
Listen to me. I'm down with it. I want to, let's keep following Daenerys. So she has at least thawed. They're in the North. She's thawed Sansa a bit, right? And they've left it at an impasse. Okay, what about the North? What about the North? And
Daenerys, hold on. Before we get past that,
yeah.
Of course, we've got to talk about, you know, it's midnight at the Winterfell Apollo, where she says, I only loved one other person like this.
Oh, yeah.
And my Lord. Says who? And she says, someone taller. Hello, Ben.
And what was great is Catfish, in the Blu-ray version of this, they're going to let the scene go on. Because it was actually, what they filmed was much longer. So Daenerys said, I've only loved somebody. Sansa's like, who? And she goes, someone much taller. And then Sansa's like, Bran? And Daenerys says, no. She goes, Ser Davos? No. Theon? No. Jaime? No. Grey Worm? No. Ser Jorah, no. Varys, no. And she went through the entire cast. Like, the long extended episode is like, is it possibly Brienne? No. You know, like, literally, she went through everybody in the cast who's taller, including Jon Royce. And then they were like, well, we got to cut this from time. Let's just cut it right there.
Oh, yeah.
So their meeting gets interrupted. This impasse about what about the North gets interrupted because who comes slinking back in his, you know, in his lousy ironborn clothes, but it's Theon Greyjoy. Now, this scene, he comes and tells Daenerys the good news. Hey, Daenerys, you know, I've rescued Yara. She's going to go back and reclaim the Iron Islands for you. Daenerys should be like, what? Who cares about those rock islands? We need people here. But she doesn't. And then in this scene, there seems to be a real moment of warmth between Sansa and Theon. And my buddy Jack, who I was watching the episode with here, Jack was like, why is she so warm to Theon? And I had to go, remember, Jack, Theon kind of helped her escape from Ramsay and Winterfell. And so at the end of this episode, Sansa is sharing a moment alone with Theon. Is there any chance that when we're like, who's Sansa going to end up with? She always wanted a handsome prince. Is she going to end up with the Prince of the Iron Islands, Theon Greyjoy? Maybe I'm going crazy. What do you think?
I mean, if so, Grey Worm is going to have to get him some pointers. You know what I thought of here? I know that in previous seasons,
yeah,
people have been upset of using basically the abuse of things that Sansa has gone through,
mm-hmm,
to give Theon a redemption arc. I know a lot of people are unhappy with Theon's redemption arc. You know, again, they think it's at the expense of Sansa and what she's gone through. In other words, like, show us how we see how good Theon is because he's helping her out. But why don't we care about her? She's the one going through all this. But I think, considering the slack we've given to other people, Jaime, etc., that Theon's redemption arc is important.
Okay.
And I actually got a little emotional that scene to see. Like, for Sansa, like, that was probably her most emotional reunion with anybody.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So for me, mostly because of like obviously how much Theon meant to her, that made it more important to me. So I thought that was interesting.
Okay, so let's skip past Daenerys is there at the kind of group meeting where they all look at the battle plans and learn stuff. But let's jump to the next kind of big Daenerys scene, in my opinion, and that's where she finally goes to seek out her nephew in the crypts, Jon Snow. And this is timing is everything. Timing is everything. I heard some people were upset with the timing of Jon Snow riding a dragon last week. The timing of, oh, wait, Sam is telling Jon Snow about his true parentage when Sam's really PO'd. Jon is telling Daenerys his backstory right before the war to end all wars. Let's get to this scene. It's almost the end of the episode. What did you think of the aunt and nephew lovers who, when they find out their aunt and nephew, seem much more concerned about who's in charge of the Iron Throne? What did you think about it? Neither of them have brought up, hey, you're my aunt, you're my nephew. Instead, it's always about, hey, wait, that would make you the last remaining male heir of House Targaryen and you'd have the claim. I think it's slightly odd, and I thought the timing of it, I knew it would be interrupted by the arrival of the Night King. Thanks a lot, Night King. But I did like the scene. Once again, this is 10 out of 10 for me, so I can't complain. What did you think about it, Catfish? What did you think about our crypt scene for this week?
I mean, the first thing that it shows me is that if you're good looking, no matter how bad
What do you mean if?
Women,
what do you mean if?
I'm talking about Jon Snow.
Oh, okay, thanks.
If you're good looking, you look good in a beard and 30 pounds of fur.
Yeah.
Even if you're absolutely horrible with women and don't know what to say to them and when to say it to them, you are still going to get the ladies because he is horrible. His sense of timing is horrible. I had mentioned this earlier. He seemed a little confused by her focus on what it meant for the succession.
Yeah.
When you would think that he might have thought about that.
Right. I was waiting. I expected when she said, you know, you would be the last male heir of House Targaryen, I was expecting him to say, you know, I don't want the crown. To say, you know, to verbalize right. that. Because as an audience member, I don't think he really wants it or cares about it. But he
right.
didn't
what if
say
he said,
it.
What if, let me pitch an alternate line. Here, go ahead. Go ahead.
If that's true, that would make you the last male heir of House Targaryen.
No shit.
Did you just also drop the mic? Is that what I...
Neil! Yeah, I mean, he just... this is partially Sam's fault. Sam's got his own issues, so Sam goads him into talking to her when, once again, not a great time. You know, I guess he could say, well, I was hiding and you found me and you forced me to, but still not the best time. It's super funny because, as you said, this is something that goes throughout the episode where those of us who are audience members are like, guys, like, don't you recognize how severe this threat is? Like, why is all this talk about what happens afterwards? Can we just focus on the undead walking towards us?
Nah. Daenerys, who told you this? John replies, Bran. She's like, he saw it. John says he saw it. And then he says, Samwell confirmed it. He read about their marriage at the Citadel. And Daenerys, there was already a trial, but she starts cross-examining it. A secret no one in the new world knew except your brother and your best friend. How convenient.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't this seem strange, jury? If the nephew doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Yeah, she was all double D in that one.
Double D?
Yeah, denying Daenerys.
Oh, poor Daenerys. And it's just the worst possible time, Jon Snow. You're so honest about everything. It's driving all of us crazy. But I also did enjoy it. I also did love that, here, let's throw another thing on. You know, maybe while they're fighting the Night King, Daenerys gets an idea of, well, if Jon falls...
I mean, I know, I like, you know, I think maybe, you know, what George R. R. Martin is, you know, trying to show throughout this whole thing is that people's petty focus on power really stops them from doing other important things and actually makes them do destructive things. So, okay, message received.
Yeah, a message beaten into our brains. So that's it for Daenerys this episode. Let's go ahead and follow John. So John, you know, he sulks out of the meeting. He's not happy at all. And the next time we really focus on him, and I actually am going to skip some things, but we had a reunion of everybody, and I thought it was so telling. He hugs Ed from the Night's Watch. He's like, hey, I missed you. He sees Tormund, and he gives him a – was that not funny? He's going to hug Ed, and Tormund tackles him because he got a
double T, a Tormund tackle.
He's like, you're prettier than my daughters. Hug, 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 hug. Loved it. But then he only shook hands. You know, he didn't hug Beric. These two guys are both back from the dead. They have a lot in common, but they're not going to hug it out. What's going on there?
I don't know. No, it's just Tormund. Tormund's got a lot of love. He's like one of those guys that come into a room and everybody lights up because they have such an infectious personality.
Tormund was great this episode. We're going to cover him a lot in a bit. But once again, let's just kind of follow Jon Snow for a bit here. And
okay, so we don't want to talk about Tormund keeping his eyes on the prize during that meeting?
No, right. He hugs Jon Snow, but his first words are really, is the big woman here? Is she here? Loved it. Oh, so good. But we'll get to Tormund in a bit because his stand-up routine, you know, his monologues were really, I loved it. But the reason why I want to focus on this Night's Watch reunion is, for some reason, I got really touched about it. They're like, hey, you know, we all came together, even though, admittedly, Ed didn't show up until the second episode. And it was great. And we had Ghost sighting. Ghost actually appeared in the episode for the first time since season six.
I think probably most people were happiest just to see Ghost. Even though Ghost clearly did not give a crap what was happening in that
right. scene. He's just standing up there. Anything happening? Anybody? But mm-hmm. I really love these black brothers coming together. I actually had a real great laugh at some of Ed's cracks about, you know, Sam. He's killed a White Walker. He's doing these he's double L loving ladies. We're doomed. It's the end of the world.
Well, once again, this proves that Samwell is a stand-in for George R. R. Martin.
Right, because it's like, yeah, you're the best, buddy.
Yeah, exactly.
Ed must have spent some time with Stannis at Castle Black because when Sam is like, I killed some Fens, and Ed corrected him and made it singular. You meant Fen.
The only thing Sam has done in multiples is book stealing. he saved one woman, one baby, killed one White Walker.
One sword. He saved one sword.
Exactly.
Anything else about Jon Snow? I guess he really doesn't do anything else in the episode besides the Daenerys scene. So is there a character or group of characters you want to follow next, Catfish? Do you want to get to Arya getting stone cold busy with Gendry? House Baratheon and House Stark getting together? Where do you want to go next?
Let's do it. Let's do the House Stark, House Baratheon get together.
So this episode, for everybody who wants to, you know, feel what it's like if you listen to this in a year or two, what it's like to watch these episodes, here it airs at 9 p.m. East time in the United States, and about, I almost want to say 10 or 8 hours before this, the episode leaked online. What people said is that HBO Germany accidentally put it up early and people were leaking things. And one of the things I read was that Arya was going to get busy with Gendry. And I was kind of like, what? Huh? They, you know, this is a quick, hey, let's do it because the world is ending. But
still, to me, I know you mentioned last week that she's actually 23.
Well, no. I think she's 22. Sorry. In real life, I think she just turned 22, so she would have been like 21 when she filmed this. But it still is a bit odd to watch, isn't it?
It still seems dirty. It seems like she's so small. It's literally like a child hit on Gendry and he was like, all right, let's go. So I'm sorry. I shouldn't be creeped out by that, but I am.
Well, we've known her. Like, if we had just met this actress now or this character now where she is a young lady and you could see, you know, I'm not sure she really looks 21 so much, but she does she looks older, let's put it that way. But
she
because
looks
we
like 15 to me, I swear to God.
Okay, well, I'm saying, you know, this is 15-year-olds. If the world's about to end, well, give them some. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm gonna. Maybe I'll just shut up. I don't know. How about this? Do you like the chemistry between the two? That she was checking him out earlier when she went to the workshop, and he's sweating there and making her stuff. She was giving him
she was giving him the
female gaze.
Right, she did a little flirting with him by throwing knives. That's always sexy.
Right.
I mean, you know what it is? Because he knew her as we knew her, where she looked like an 8-year-old girl. So she's got to do something to get his attention to show, number one, make me this weapon, and number two, like, I am woman, hear me roar. So that was a good scene for that because, of course, you know, as audience members, we make certain assumptions. So because we've known for so long that Arya is a badass, I forget that Gendry doesn't know that she's a badass.
Right.
So
actually, that's a great point.
Scene.
That's a great point. Yeah, it was for him
good
to
scene.
See it.
Yeah, for him to see, like, okay, she is a badass. And even though the scene was short, that was enough to see she was a badass. I also like the idea that I'm sure has come to other people, but didn't come to me until tonight.
What do you mean? What the idea?
How about her wearing the face of a White Walker?
Oh, yeah, because she wants to know what they look like, right? She's like, what do they look like?
And
Gendry's like, they look like death.
Right? She wants to, I mean, you got to do it all. How many faceless men have worn the face of a White Walker? She wants to be on the vanguard.
What if she had put on a White Walker face right when Gendry woke up the next morning?
Oh, wow. Wow. And she's like, I'm sorry, I just haven't done my hair yet.
Call me crazy. Yeah. I think they actually did have some chemistry, but just because when she did, you know, when she was claiming her man later in the episode and taking off her clothes, you know, I kind of almost wanted to look away. I was like, and I did. For everybody listening, I did look away because it's like, are they really going to? Well, I guess
it's weird. I felt prurient. I'm like, I don't want to see her butt or boobs. Like, I think of her as like a little girl. No.
Right. When she starts stripping off, I thought, oh, yeah, this episode had something like BN. It's rated here in the United States, brief nudity, violence, this, this. And I thought, oh, no, Arya. I thought it'd be Gendry. I'd be like, yeah, Gendry, that's fine. You're of age. But
I was still hoping the scene before she gets busy with Gendry, she goes out and she has a little discussion
with the Hound. Yeah,
with the Hound. And you know, from last week, I was standing the Hound in her. I feel like they are two in their temperament. They are more soulmates than her and Gendry.
Well, okay. You know, let's go philosophical.
That would be very bizarre, though, right. Really.
Let's go philosophical. Philosophical. It's the end of the world. You're gonna be with somebody. Do you want to be with somebody who you kind of, you know, relate to philosophically, or do you want to be with a hot armorer who you've been lusting after for a long time?
I mean, I always knew that in the end of the world situation where someone's looking for a little bit of love, that I wouldn't be getting any knocks on my door. So I understood.
What do you mean?
You
leave the door closed? Open the door.
No, I would open the door to no one there.
Oh, okay.
They would be at the
to no one.
House.
That's a no. It's a faceless man to no one. Who's there? No one. But I, you know, last week I thought the Hound and Arya were going to hug it out. This gave me kind of what I needed. Even though the Hound is still the Hound, he's never going to change. But this gave me what I needed because she's like, you know, hey, you've joined the Brotherhood. You're here fighting for somebody other than yourself, you know. And he says, I fought for you, didn't I? And that was kind of the warmth I wish had been in last week's episode, but now that it's here, I really liked it. Beric comes up. It's a nice reminder to the audience that, hey, Beric and Arya actually met each other and had some time together, you know, in the third season. And so I like that as well. But she calls him old, hashtag olds. And the Hound is even like, was he on your list? And she's like, well, for a little bit, you know. Was Gendry ever on the list? Gendry now is the new list.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He's the complete list. There will be no games of what I like to call Hound in the Middle.
Okay. We've got to get away from this because we're really going crazy. Does this here, you know, we've been talking about certain characters getting their moment in the spotlight because it's going to signal it's the end. Does this for Arya and Gendry, the fact that they went and did it, is this a horror movie is this a horror movie that because, you know, some characters had sex, they're going to die? What do you think? Was that in any way signaling either one could bite the dust?
I mean, you called this out earlier. Practically every scene is a scene in a regular series where you'd be like, oh, my God, we had that scene. That means at least one of these people is going to die. I'm telling you, you could make a drinking game out of this. The sex is – that's a horror movie. But for any other kind of drama or when there's people in danger, when you have these like serious conversations, I mean anybody could be next. They almost – I felt it was almost a game on their part. Like you're not going to be able to guess who's going to die because we're going to give everybody their shining moment.
Well, I would think in this short scene between the Hound and Beric, even the Hound's like, you know, you'll keep wondering why the Lord of the Light brought you back. The Lord of the Light, if it has a purpose, it brought Beric back for a reason. And I always have thought, maybe this is based a bit on the third book, that the reason why it brought Beric back is because it wants him to, you know, breathe his last life into somebody else who's dying. Who could that be? Maybe it's the Hound, now that they're seeming to pair up in this upcoming battle. Do you want to see a brought back from death Hound battle his brought back from death brother, the Mountain? Is that what we're setting up?
I love it. Let's do this thing. I mean, I don't know. This is crazy. There's four episodes left. How do we even get to Cersei and the Gold Company? Like, this is going to be there's going to be a lot going on.
How about this? Is Cersei going to be in next week's episode? She wasn't in this one. Next week seems to be the entire battle. Has Cersei won? Is this the smart move?
Oh, absolutely. It's a smart move because this is the move we've been saying that Joffrey's going to do. Is that he's going to pretend to be dead. He's going to duck out and he's going to come in and let two groups fight and then pick up the, you know, defeat the scraps of whatever's left.
Yeah. Okay, so we've touched on Arya getting busy and learning that the guy she has a crush on was Robert Baratheon's bastard. We've talked about the Hound and Beric. Where do you want to go next? Do you want to go back to the Kingslayer? We started with his trial. He was all over this episode after not appearing in the original episode.
Oh, yeah. Now we got Bran and Jaime. We got Tyrion and Jaime. Then Brienne and Jaime. Let's go through it. Jaime and Tyrion. We got a lot of it.
And I think people who love Jaime and Brienne, number one, they love the trial, that Brienne stood up for him and defended him, all that stuff. I think they love that. But seeing the two brothers back together, I mean, they had several scenes back together, walking through the Winterfell courtyard later on. I love one of the things evil Uncle Tyrion said, where he was like, you know, I wish Father was here so he could see us dying, defending the, you know, Winterfell. That would cause Tywin to roll over in his grave again. But let's get to it. It turns out, you know, this was
it's
the cliff.
Because, you know, there is so much talk of how we're going to die in this episode. Everybody thinks they're going to die except for Daenerys
right.
and Sansa, who are still plotting the after effects.
Well,
I mean, we assume, right? This is going to be episode 3. Not a spoiler or anything, but we assume that Winterfell is going to fall and then there's some people are going to get away.
Maybe Tyrion's right. Maybe they live. Maybe they win somehow. Maybe this brand bait plan works. But before we get to the battle plans, which I promised listeners we're going to cover, last week ended on Jaime and Bran. Bran has been wheeled out to the Weirwood here, the Godswood, this tree, and he's just left there. You know, do you think the people who wheeled him out there are like, should we stay? Should we go? Three-Eyed Raven's like, later. And so...
Oh, no, they're like, you for sure, they're looking. They're like, can we go? And he says something weird and obtuse, and they're like, let's get out of here. This guy's creepy.
No, they say, should we go? And he'd go, are you going to go back and diddle yourself like you did a couple of days ago? Oh, sorry, Bran. Don't tell me anymore. So Jaime comes out there. And I think so many of us after last week's cliffhanger, we wanted to see this scene. Jaime's first question to Bran is, why didn't you tell anybody? Now, of course, Catelyn Stark knew this. Catelyn Stark knew this from the 10th episode, the final episode of season 1. Jaime told her he threw Bran out the window. Did she not tell anybody? Or is everyone she told that Jaime threw Bran out the window now dead?
I think that's probably the case. And I don't think, do you think, let's say Sansa knew that her now creepy brother was thrown out the window by Jaime. Do you think she would have been cool with the rest of it? I don't think so.
No, not at all. What's interesting is that, you know, Jaime's trying to say, I'm sorry. And Bran correctly says, you weren't really sorry then. You're sorry now. You weren't sorry then. I loved that point. I've always loved Bran, but this year we're getting peak Bran. Love it. Or maybe peak three-eyed Raven.
He makes an interesting point, two interesting points. You know, he says it's if you're dead, you can't help us. And the other interesting thing he says I thought was really cool and obviously very forward-looking, as Bran is, since he doesn't have human emotions anymore. He says, you know, if you hadn't done that, we wouldn't be the people that we are today.
Paralyze me. I'm not gonna be philosophical about it. Maybe I would. Who knows? This is so many years later. But Bran also leaves this scene. Bran leaves this scene saying, well, what if there is no tomorrow? And Bran's the only one, and he has the future vision. Everybody else is making plans after the battle. He's the one who's like, how do you know there isn't afterwards? Oh, loved it, loved it, loved it. Ooh.
Yeah, more people should listen to Bran, and maybe they wouldn't fight so much about stupid shit.
Is that foreshadowing, though, that Jaime's gonna die? He's like, why do you think there's gonna be an afterwards for you? You're dead, dude.
No, I think he's talking about everyone. I still tend to believe Bran is, besides Jon, it may be Daenerys, are the only people who still are aware of how dire this threat is.
Okay, so once again, Tyrion and his brother Jaime, they're getting spit out by Winterfell soldiers, and nobody likes them. And they, you know, they start talking about things. And one of the things I thought that was really stone cold was Tyrion, telling Jaime, you knew who Cersei was. Don't pretend you didn't know who she was, and you loved her anyway. Ouch.
Oh. Ooh. So good. But I mean, I think that's it's sort of a little bit of a diss, but it's more just like, you know, whatever. You can't help who you love. But for some reason, the way that Tyrion said it, it didn't seem as accusatory to me and just sort of like, that's the way that it goes. So maybe I was just misinterpreting there.
They have the debate if Cersei's lying about the baby. Jaime believes it's real. I have to be honest, I do too. They go up on the battlement. They have some more talking. Jaime totally gets distracted from Uncle Tyrion because he sees Brienne out there. He goes out there, sees Pod learning how to fight. Pod, you are so dead.
Pod, pack it on the pound.
Right. And then Jaime goes out there, and in the second great Jaime and Brienne scene of the episode, he hems and haws a bit, but he's really just trying to say, hey, I'd be honored to fight for you. And so he knows that as the one-armed fighter, he's going to be under her. Not sexually, people, but he's going to be under her.
I mean, he's involved in the other potential three-way in this episode as well. So for sure, there could be something there.
But I liked it. I loved it. All these people are getting moments. Once again, I think Pod getting so many moments, I feel bad. I feel real bad for Daniel Portman, the actor who plays Pod. I think he's in trouble. Jaime, I think there's a chance. I would think he does survive this somehow. I think he's got to confront Cersei. But I don't know. Bran gave me some scares there with what makes you think there is a afterwards. So Jaime ends up with Tyrion again. So he left Tyrion to talk to Brienne. He ends up with him again as they decide to, you know, sit by the fire. Everybody else is out in the cold. And they're like, you know what? Let's us sit out.
Let's have some wine. Let's do this.
Yeah, let's get crazy. Let's tell some family stories, and then they get joined by just a truly odd group of characters, and I loved it. I loved the fireside chat of it all. You know, when would you ever have a meeting of Tormund and Jaime, with Tormund totally, totally turning on the charm for his crush, for his love, Brienne? Oh,
completely. And the funny thing is, I mean, Jaime, I don't think Jaime. It's not a love thing for Jaime towards Brienne, but he respects her. And, you know, it's funny when they were showing this scene, like, instead of him watching Tormund, which I would be doing if telling a crazy story, Jaime is watching Brienne to kind of, like, see what her reaction to it is. So, for sure, there's a it's unrequited love. It's a two-way unrequited love. Brienne's for Jaime, and Tormund's for Brienne, for sure.
I got to say that the great Twitter follow, the Aria of Susans at Barbasu on Twitter. She said that she was listening to us live, but she had to jump away because of bad Wi-Fi. But she wanted us to talk about the double T.
Double T.
Thirsty Torment. Oh, man.
Well, now, but what was she talking about? Him completely draining his horn or suckling at the teat of a giant for 3 months? Because well, either way, he has a thirst for life that is unmatched on this show.
Oh, when he was dribbling the goblet or whatever, the horn of ale or who knows, fermented, you know, milk or whatever it was he was drinking, that was so wonderful that it poured all over him. My buddy Jack, who I was watching it with, he just started howling. He loved it. It was almost like, and I feel terrible for Jack, he saw Tormund and he's like, that's a role model. He's like, that's how I'm going to live my life. Podrick sings a song about, I believe, and I'm just blanking real quickly, I blink, it's about a maiden pool who had a jonquil. I'm getting some of the lore messed up. But Podrick had a wonderful singing voice, and that is what you want to do. You want to sing a real lovely song before we all go out and die. What'd you think?
I think it was okay. But really, to me, what was powerful about this scene, and more damning than having the first sex in your life as to your fate, is the very moving thing that happens to Brienne in this scene.
Yeah, and Jack, my buddy watching it with me, he turned to me and he goes, is this the first time we've ever seen anybody knighted on this show? And I'm pretty sure it is. It's we saw Brienne swear an oath to Sansa, and earlier in season 2, we saw her swear an oath and kind of, you know, swear herself to Catelyn Stark. But this, I'm pretty sure, is the first time we've seen somebody knighted. And I loved Tormund got off on it. He's like, if I were king, I would knight you. And Jaime's like, well, anybody can be knighted. I kind of thought Jaime should have knighted everybody in the room. Like, he's like, hey, Pod, come here. I'm going to knight you. Tormund, come here. You're going to be knighted. I loved it.
Yeah, but it was nice that it happened to Brienne, who's been living that stupid code and honor for her life, and to finally get some recompense for it. That was beautiful. It would have cheapened if it had been like, Tyrion, get up here.
Well, he's like, Tyrion, you don't have to deal. You just tap your shoulder. Oh. What's funny is they do all these Jon Snow short jokes, but nobody slams on Tyrion anymore. That's good. I love, you know, spread the wealth is what I say.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Well, you know what? Like, from my notes, I'm not looking at the callback. It seemed to me there was only a few other, like, random things that happened that were kind of slightly interesting. It was all kind of like small pieces of coop. Do we want to talk about, like, little glimpses of things that I noted that were important, that I thought were interesting?
Yeah. Jump through some. And then,
okay, so
and then
we
I,
have,
yeah, go.
Oh, well, first we have. What was a really fascinating callback was when Sir Knuckles was like arming people for battle, and the little girl comes up, and of course, with the grayscale on her face, of course, you cannot help but be reminded of Shireen, who he cared so much for.
Right. Now, I have to say, I kind of thought it looked maybe like more like a burn mark or just a scar than grayscale. But you're right. This was a total callback to Shireen Baratheon, the little light of his life, pun intended.
Yeah. And the little girl was so cute. She was so brave and cute. And then Gilly takes her away. It was Gilly who took her away, right? With the excuse, I need you to guard me.
Defend us down in the crypts. Yeah, I thought Gilly was great in this episode, her first appearance in season 8. And the fact that she was, like I said, she was being a leader. The first time we saw Gilly, she was kind of pointing people to where the crypts were. I really, really liked that. What was another scene you liked?
Well, I also noticed, you know, there's kind of a stereotype that's not necessarily true because racism exists everywhere in the United States, but there's a stereotype that it's particularly egregious in the South, whereas clearly in this world, up in the North, racists, the Winterfellians are racist. The little kids.
I know, it was so
scared.
Uncomfortable, terrible.
It's really mean, and so of course Grey Worm comes up to, they shun Missandei, and then Grey Worm is like, It's funny. He didn't say, like, let's get out of here. These people do not appreciate it. He's like, she said, don't you want to go anywhere? And she said, the beach. And he's like, hell yes, let's go to the damn beach.
Yeah.
I completely agree.
And you know, spoiler alert, if you've heard me, I've been really down on Grey Worm's chances, but it was very touching. I've been tough on the romance. If you've been listening to Joffrey podcast all these years, I've been really tough on the romance of, like, why are we wasting any time on Grey Worm and Missandei? But this little scene really worked for me. I don't like them, you know, feeling uncomfortable and having people, you know, stare at them and kind of walk away in the north. And this was a really powerful scene for me. Once again, it might be a seed signaling that there's going to be some big heartbreak for one of them or possibly both of them. But I did get emotionally moved by the scene. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it was definitely sweet. And then the only other thing that I kind of wanted to talk about, you said you wanted to talk about it in a little bit of detail, was the brand bait, because this is something that we didn't, I've never heard this before. This is completely new information that really the Night King wants. Who knew that he cared about the three-eyed raven?
Let's get to the start of it. The start of it is Jon kind of saying, it feels like if we can kill the Night King, we get to him, he's our best chance. And Jaime is thinking of the Night King like a typical commander. And he's like, well, wait a minute. If that means if we get to him, we win, then he won't bring himself out into the field. And of course, the double B Bran bait, he's like, no, guess what? He will. And then Bran has a bit of an info dump for all of us, including the viewers, of that, hey, the Night King has wanted to kill the three-eyed raven for a long time. He's got my mark, so he always knows where I am. This is really scary for Bran and for Theon, who's now going to defend Bran. But I thought it was great information. I loved it.
Yeah, I didn't feel like, oh my God, this is out of nowhere. It made complete sense to me. I mean, it is a little bit of a help now that, you know, they can actually focus the Night King's attacks. But we could talk about the plan more, but I don't see how anyone lives. I just don't see it. I just don't see it. Of course, I didn't think Tormund was going to make it away from the wall either, and somehow he survived, so.
Listen to me. You know that what if it's dragon glass, Valyrian steel, and of course, giant's breast milk, which save you from the White Walkers?
Yes. Oh, Tormund, please don't kill Tormund. Mother Windham Wizard, my favorite.
Oh, I loved it. Now, Bran says, you know, he's the memories of the world. Is it possible? Everybody says Sam's going to write the stories after. Sam wouldn't have the knowledge of, you know, what's going on with Daenerys, what's going on with Cersei. The only one who would have the knowledge is Bran, who'd be able to tell him. But Bran, boy, I would not want to be bait for the Night King. Oh, this is terrible. And so the plan is next week, he's going to be out by the Weirwood Tree by himself and Theon. Ooh, not good.
No, not where I would want to be. I would say, where is the furthest geographic location?
Right. If he's after you, Bran, why don't we put you on a dragon and send you really far north?
Yeah, right.
Away from civilization, and then he'll chase you and we'll be fine.
Makes complete sense to me. Like, you don't care, right, Bran? Bran, you don't care about living or dying. Come on.
Somebody says, we'll hold them off as long as we can. And then Tyrion has his moment here where he's like, you know, I'll be up on the wall with Ser Davos. And Daenerys reinforces her thought that, hey, Tyrion, your brains are worthwhile. They've made so many mistakes. We're due for something good. We're going to put you down in the grips.
Well, yeah, completely right. I mean, sadly, however, there are some people that you can't tell things to who shouldn't be in the fight, and that is, I'm very afraid for Triple L, Little Lady Lyanna.
Oh man.
Says, I am fighting and you can't stop me. Yikes.
Man, oh man. I want Bran to survive. Everybody's getting scared. Lady Lyanna Mormont. That was a scene, I have to be honest, I was also waiting for Lyanna to meet with Ser Jorah, who, you know, could have, if he hadn't been exiled, would have been the leader of her house. And yet here it is. Everybody's going to, in Tormund's words, die together. Ugh.
All right. Well, that sounds like fun.
Tune in next week. Yay. Catfish, can this... You know, the one thing about Battle of the Bastards, yeah, it kind of was set up for a while, but really, the pre-battle stuff was all in that episode. The Battle of the Wall, it was set up for almost 2 years, it feels like. Once again, the pre-battle stuff really happened in that episode, season 4, episode 9, Watchers on the Wall. That set up that. The Battle of Hardhome, we didn't have a setup for because it was supposed to be a surprise. The Battle on the Loot Train last season, we didn't have a setup for. This battle that's coming next week, it feels like we've had 2 episodes to set up. Can this battle next week, which is going to be a 90-minute battle, can it live up to the hype? Can it do it? What are your thoughts going in? You gave this episode 9 out of 10. That's really strong. Can next week's episode do it?
Right. 82 minutes I see for next week's episode. I say yes, but obviously I think that, you know, for anybody who was disappointed in this episode, as I was watching until again I realized what I think is going to happen. I mean, we are going to lose. We're going to lose some people next week, and we're only going to have a little bit of time before we get re-engaged back in the battle. Like, we're going to lose a few people next week that we care about, I presume.
All right, how about this? Listeners,
it's not going to be in the last 5 minutes. We're going to lose some people
early
throughout the battle, yeah.
Well, let's get to it, Catfish. Let's be especially morbid. And loyal listeners, I want you to join in on this too. What is the named characters we know? What is the over-under on the number who are going to die? More than 10, less than 10? What do you think?
Oh, no, I'd say less than 10.
Yeah, I'm thinking that way too. For people who are like, how is that possible? I would go back to George R. R. Martin's books. How many named characters that we knew their names died in the Battle of Blackwater, episode 9 of season 2? Really, just Davos's son, I think, is the only real named character we knew who died. Who died in the Watchers on the Wall that we knew? Well, Pip and Gren, we knew them, but they were smaller characters. The Thin, we kind of knew his name. Ygritte, certainly a big character, but once again, there weren't a lot. How many people died in the Battle of the Bastards that we knew? Rickon, okay. The Giant 1-1, sure. And Ramsay, sure. Otherwise, you know, there weren't a lot of people dying. And so despite the fact that I think a lot should, I think next week's number of total casualties will be under 10. That is my prediction. And you've already heard Podrick Bane. I think, boy, you're really, really in trouble, Podrick. I think Grey Worm, I love you, but oh boy, really, really in trouble.
Eric Dondarrion.
Oh, little lady. Trouble. Oh, yeah. Terrible, terrible. Ooh, they kept showing. What's funny is in this episode, they not only was our boy Jan Royce all over it, but they also showed little lady Karstark. I believe it's Alice Karstark. Don't hold me to that, but I believe that's her name on the show. Yeah, they show. She didn't get any lines, but she was there. Yeah, I think. So maybe 10, maybe 10's the perfect number. Listeners, reach out to us on Twitter, on Instagram, at DoublePHQ, Facebook.com/DoublePHQ, YouTube. We apologize. Just search Double P Podcast, Double P Media, the Joffria Podcast. You'll find us. We want you on this voyage with us. Catfish, anything else to say as we wrap up this really good episode, in our opinion?
I mean, nothing else to say about the episode, but tonight is a special night. So a special night deserves a special Joffrey of the Week.
Ooh.
If we're ready for that.
Why don't you explain to our listeners what the Joffrey of the Week is?
Well, for those of you who are new to the podcast and only have showed up because finally you realize that Joffrey is the most honorable, the most decent, the most intelligent, the most handsome, the most thoughtful.
Go on.
Human that has ever existed, real or fictional. You finally have come to this podcast and you realize that and you say to yourself, oh, God, I just can't imagine being like Joffrey.
Right.
It's too much to aspire to. And I agree. So every week, what we try to do is we try to bring up people, either real or fictional, or sometimes ideas or thoughts, seasons, that embody Joffrey, at least in some small way, so that you could try to ape at least, maybe you can try to pattern your life against on these people, because you can't pattern your life against Joffrey. Just no one can be that good and amazing.
Nobody.
So every week we try to come up with someone who's a little bit inspirational. And you know, Bubba, this week I had someone come to me and say, how can you not do Donald Trump every week? And I've said to him, we did Donald Trump a bunch.
Oh, yeah, boy.
And then I think we almost made it the Donald Trump of the week. Donald Trump is the closest.
He wants that honor. He wants that honor, but we're not going to give it to him.
He's the closest that there is, but we need to come up with different names every week. And so for this week.
This week.
What did I say about Joffrey? Joffrey, as we all know, supposedly died.
Faked his death.
He's gonna come back again, and he's going to make the world a better place. So my draw for you of the week is Jesus Christ.
Oh, no. JC?
JC, you can't aspire to be Joffrey, but you can aspire to be Christ-like. That's easier.
Hey. Oh, boy. That's nothing like being blasphemous on Easter there,
Kevin. Just like Joffrey rose from the dead.
Okay. Now, I'm going to go in. So, listeners, you can also write us and tell us your Joffrey of the Week. I'm going to go a bit different based on something that I found really filling this week, if that's okay, Catfish.
Please, go right ahead.
My Joffrey on the Week, you know, some people, when they looked at Joffrey, they saw darkness. They saw a dark character. They saw a dark soul without seeing the inner light within, the inner white knight within, you know, this darkness. And so, to me, the best representation of His Grace Sir Joffrey are these Game of Thrones Oreo cookies. Because, yes, you can see the darkness, but you also need to see the light within. The thing that'll save us, the wonderful, creamy center of His Grace, King Joffrey, which was always there. Which was always there to kind of give us, you know, sure, he had a bit of a crunch when he fell down at his wedding, but his inside was still beating full of cream.
Right,
and
right.
So,
and he's also good with milk.
Right, he's great. He's a great treat. Watching Joffrey was a treat. These are wonderful treat cookies. The Game of Thrones Oreos. Not a sponsor of this show, but I bought 3 bags of the damn thing. My Joffrey of the Week. Yeah, nothing better.
Love it. Love it. All right. Well, I mean, yes, to definitely go with the Oreo cookies and not the body of Christ. All right. So
okay.
There are only 4 more episodes next week.
Oh, my God.
But
oh
there's a special treat next week.
Oh, there is.
Yeah, Bubba, you will be back in town haunting your old dig, so we will do this in person, so we will interrupt each other less because you will stare at me meanly when I interrupt you. I can't see you when we Skype, so I will interrupt you less, and hopefully we will be able to go to a very special For Your Consideration Emmy event for Game of Thrones. If so, we will be doing the podcast a little bit later.
Right. We want to thank everybody. I want to just go ahead and shout them out. We've got somebody whose actual name is follower on Twitter, Matt Papa. We've got a lot of people tweeting out, thanking us. I can't jump in and see right now the people on YouTube who are watching as we do this live, listening as we do this live. But thank you, guys. We do this live after every show. Next week might be a little later than normal, but every show after that, meaning the final 3, as soon as the episode ends, and as soon as Bubba can get this technical stuff working, we're going to be going. We're going to be rocking. We want to hear your thoughts. Tweet to us at DoublePHQ, Instagram at DoublePHQ, Facebook.com/DoublePHQ. Leave those comments on YouTube. Oh, wait, here's some. Okay, we got John Wambacher. We got Mark Walker. We got so many people. My eyes are going bad. I can't read them all. But definitely join us on this fun, on this last 4 episodes. Boy, next week, it's going to be great. It's going to be great.
All right, excellent.
Oh, man, we got so many comments on Facebook. I promise I'll reply to them as soon as this podcast is over. For everybody, my name's Bubba. You can find me on Twitter at FitandTrim. That's FitenTrim, at FitandTrim on Twitter.
And I'm Catfish. You can hit me up at CJGman67. And we will talk to you next week on
The Joffrey Podcast. And you know what? I'm gonna keep going for a bit. I'm gonna read some of these. Hey, Corey is saying Jamie's dead next week. He had a lot to atone for. Mark totally agrees. Jamie's not long of this world until Arya uses his face to kill Cersei. Oh, good. We got Kara who's saying, I need to write a review for you guys. Love it. Thank you so much. We got Bobby Romero who said, F you. I guess his stream didn't work. We apologize for that. Everybody, thank you so much for listening to us. And once again, we'll see you next week.
All right.
All righty. Okay. Did that end? Your live video has ended. Excellent. Let's go to this and say stop the broadcast. I think it did. Let's go to YouTube. And hopefully YouTube ended. Sometimes YouTube gets
it still says live to me.
All righty. Okay, I don't know. But, you know, I don't know what it's going to take to get YouTube to end. It's so crazy. But I'm going to stop and I'm going to edit this. Catfish, I'll see you next week. Exciting.
All right. Awesome, man.
All right. I'll talk to you, obviously, before then. But I got to run and start editing. All right.
Okay, yeah. Go do it. All right.
See ya.
Bye.